We ready to get this show on the road?
Okay.
So, Patrick emailed me, and I wasn't able to get back to you, Patrick, and I apologize for that.
Had me at the, there was a couple of things that were coming together for me here, but the big one was that coming alive through embodiment is an emergent event. And I copied from page 267 on Chronicle K, and I'll read that for you. Once upon a time, as a condition, you were everything yet nothing. Nothing particular or significant, and you could not be known or even distinguished. From random, I put in parenthesis without intention, just to make sure people remember what that is. From random stirrings of this condition, you, and I added, emergently coalesced as a concept. And you sensed yourself as a concept. But what concept were you? Emergent from a sensing yourself and living as a concept was a self-image or a personal self. And what it really brought home for me, given that it was emergent, it seems to me that this confirms that coming alive was not an act of volition, but rather an emergent miracle. But we weren't sitting around there, we meaning that pre-embodiment, looking for a way to do something. Coming alive was an emergent event.
Well, let me add to that. There is nothing that is not an emergent event.
Absolutely. But in one way or another, I was hanging on to some kind of notion that there was this pre-embodiment self that coalesced and decided that it wanted to be more particular.
Well, we don't know if something like that didn't occur, but if it did, then it was still a constituent.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know how much thoughting could go on beforehand. We don't know if any can, but if it can, it would still be a constituent of the emergent of your coming alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if I'm personally more comfortable with the notion that this random stirring of this condition coalesced as a concept, that there was, again, there was nothing in there, the hint, no hint whatsoever that somebody was, there was in itself that was actually thinking. Its first sense self, its sense that there is something like thinking, was you sense yourself as a concept. So right now, it's uncomfortable with the notion that emergent of that stirring and the coalescing as a concept is coming alive. And I agree with you, we just simply don't know if there's any other intervening constituents.
But you know, there's also the possibility that it's all simultaneous.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. It doesn't. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I think all this kind of stuff happens outside of what we normally think of as time.
Right. So could there be a thought process that goes on? Yeah, but maybe at the same time that everything else is going on, and all of that together are, all of those together are constituents of the emergent of our coming alive.
Yes. Then we move to the second one.
Before you move to the second one, I have a question.
Yeah, does anybody, I was going to say, does anybody have a...
Yeah, when you see this piece here in writing, if you allow me to make this linear for just a second, at what point in, you know, linear time, or maybe that's not appropriate, are you talking about? Is this before you even, I mean, because I read this as like so far back, you know, in the quiescent universe.
I think that, as Misty said, and I hadn't written about it here, that as it's written, it seems sequential, and it's not necessarily so.
No, yeah. So we can talk about it in language, I guess.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure that I understand your question. You want to try it again? Andrew?
Well, so once you come alive, then is there intention to incarnate, or I don't know how to ask this. To me, this is talking about so far back before, in a sense, you know, eons ago. Or maybe it's not.
Well, one of the things that I remember reading clearly is that somewhere in the last year of his life, Roger talked about life was kind of waited until things had settled and that there's a consistent and reliable environment within which to come alive in. Me, that indicates that prior to there being a consistent environment in which to come alive, there could have been all kinds of coalescing into concepts of self, but no coming aliving, no coming alive was occurring yet, and so it seems that there was this a waiting of a development in the physical universe so that there was a place and an opportunity to come alive?
Well, since it's out of time, there really was no waiting.
No, you're absolutely correct. From that personal self that became aware of itself, there was no waiting. But in trying to explain it to people, that coming alive didn't occur in a time sense until there was a stable and reliable place to come alive.
I remember Roger asking, the universe has been around 13.5 billion years, where the heck were you? Nobody ever answered the question, and he never took it much further than that.
Well, if you think of it this way, then it's irrelevant, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. He asked the question as if it wasn't, to me anyway, he was making a point. It wasn't really the whole conversation. I can't remember.
But he would ask questions like that just to get you to start thinking.
Yeah. I think you're right, Missy. Any more questions?
No.
Okay, then the second one that I wanted to go with is the one that says more thought. Okay, the universe is so benevolent that it does it for all intents and purposes. Even though you exist. If it were otherwise, the very act of the universe perceiving and noting your existence would declare and particularize you in some way, thereby removing from you the privilege of declaring and living as you truly are. And what does this mean for me? This confirms that I have the authority and autonomy to declare and live as I truly desire. And, really important for me, it helps me depersonalize the universe as random and without intention, and provides the foundation for emergence to exist. It seems to me that in my own thinking anyway, I must have been holding on to the universe as some kind of unified entity that could think of and say, there's Andrew, there's Patrick, there's Misty, or whatever. And it helped me a lot to come to this conclusion, to say that it is impersonal and non-specific, and that absolutely confirms the autonomy and authority each of us has.
What I was curious about is the first line where you said the universe is so benevolent. I didn't quite figure what benevolent had to do with it, because to me, I know you got to the random and impersonal, but to me that was what, I mean, I started there with the image of the universe. So I didn't understand benevolent.
Well, the benevolence, but from the point of view of it, that it's so supportive that it never ever impinges on us by mm-hmm. even particularizing us to know that we exist.
Mm.
That it completely, it adds, to me, it adds to that whole notion about how benevolent the universe is, that it will be as we are. And will support us in whatever we declare ourselves to be and live. It seemed to me that if the universe ever pulls itself into a particular place, so that there's Andrew or Karen or Patrick, then by the very act of doing that, it's actually, I could say that it's malevolent rather than benevolent, because it takes away my power to be as I desire.
What was the other word besides benevolent?
Malevolent.
With an M before?
M, yes. Malevolent. Yes. Malevolent?
Towards the bad side.
Okay, yeah.
So I guess it also stems from a lot of contact that I have with people that have the universe out there as some kind of stand-in for God who
uh-huh.
is watching over and helping uh-huh. and has our best interests at heart and
uh-huh.
all these things.
Yep.
And if they look, come on. It cares so much it doesn't care. You know, Roger uses that a lot. It simply doesn't care whether we're alive or dead.
Mm-hmm.
It has no matter to the universe.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the image was, the universe just reacts. It's just an environment. And in that environment, reactions are occurring. And so the idea of it being aware of thinking, of having an opinion or anything, just doesn't seem to play in.
I agree.
All right, then the next one, it was written specifically to Andrew. he inspired me last Monday when he asked Simone to tell us her declaration statement. And what ensued reminded me that I had not really nailed my own statement. My own statement was kind of mushy about it. I'm kind of mushy about it, and it was flexible to what was going on at any particular occasion. As it happened, I had also inspired myself to try a different way to help members of our local group to bring a focus to their own attempts to declare themselves. I asked our group to give some thought to what there was about themselves that made them unique. During our meeting 2 days later, after our last Monday call, we had a great discussion that seemed to really help each of them see themselves in a different light and move them much closer to knowing the concept of self they had when they came alive. And that, we had done the six or eight things you're proud of as a way to kind of find our way into who we are and what we be prepared to declare ourselves. And a bunch of the stuff we've been reading in the last few Mondays is how the coalescence of health and looking to be unique. I thought that might be a good way to get into these kind of conversations with the group. And it did work out quite nicely. We even Eric, who has traditionally had a hell of a time to think of these concepts, by asking him to talk about what there is about unique about him, he very quickly got into a statement, a declaration of who he is. And it was really neat to see how that worked. And then in making my own preparations for the meeting, if I was going to ask those guys to be members of the group to be talking about what they think is unique about themselves, I ended up clarifying my own statement. And I came alive to offer order to those who believe their lives are without order and meaning. And it's one of the things that I do as a consultant. People tell me I bring order out of chaos. That's what they like to have me around, and they pay me to be around. And I think what that breaks down to is that I think I came alive, pure and simple, to help others focus in on what it is that they truly desire and what they want to live. And in that sense, I bring order to people who feel that they're living without order and without meaning. And I guess the other one I thought it was important to talk about, they came alive with full access to the universe, knowledge of how the universe works, but I set that aside to live by the dictates of cause and effect and judgment. I sometimes find it disheartening to be living in that world, and that there's ways that I just don't know how to communicate with people oftentimes. My own family, right, people who used to be close to, and I just don't have a lot of ways to communicate with them anymore. They're so thoroughly involved in cause and effect and judgment. Sometimes I just don't know how to talk to them, period. And I know I lived a very large part of my life exactly like that.
So Pat, I have a question. This is not the first time I've heard you say something akin to came alive with full access to the knowledge of how the universe works. And just for funsies, Where does that come from within you? Where does that emanate from? Are you just memorizing that or saying it so that you can put it there and try to, you know, get there? Or is there some other origin story for that one?
Well, there's part of my original origin story was written like that.
Right, I remember.
I tap back to my time as a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old. I had no doubt about how the universe worked. And I was already labeled by my teachers as a little bishop. I was so knowledgeable, and not that I was a goody two-shoes, that I just knew how things worked. And later on, I gave that up to fit in. Everybody else was doing cause and effect, and I guess I decided that's what you're supposed to do, and I went ahead and did that. So it was my original origin story had me coming alive. Total recall or total access to all knowledge of how the universe works.
So you came alive with full access to the knowledge of how the universe works, but that knowledge did not include the knowledge of how relationships work, such that you couldn't get along with everybody else, so you gave up your knowledge of the universe because you didn't know how to bring that into relationships.
That's a good assessment, yes.
Okay. So relationships with others and living your life is separate from knowledge of how the universe is working.
It certainly was at that point in time. And I know that until relatively recently, I held this notion that I could really do this forever living stuff as long as I could take care of things that really counted in life. You know, it was one of those things I could do when I wasn't busy getting by in life. I held that notion for the longest time. These are good ideas, but you know, I got to live and I get along, and I can get along in this world.
So you have an image of separation going between your relationship, personal relationship with the universe, and knowledge of the universe, and how to live life, how to survive.
I have had that, and to one degree or another it's still around, but it's getting less and less all the time now. And I wouldn't mind talking about a dream I had last night. Are you guys up for that?
Absolutely.
What was quite unusual as well is that the dream occurred in the first hour of sleep. Most of my experience of dreams is later in the day or in the night. In this particular dream, it was New Year's, and me, and I think it was Eric and Terry from our group, not 100% sure of that, but there was two guys that decided that we were going to celebrate New Year's, and we were going to go over to Misty's house. And that she was going to join us, and we were going to usher in the new year together. And when we got to Misty's house, we got to talking about whether it was a good idea to go out and do a bunch of drinking or whatever. And the police were going to be around, and it was kind of a silly idea. to go out and do a bunch of drinking and then have to find a way to get home. So we decided that we would stay at Misty's house. And Eric and Terry went off to pick up some beverages of various kinds. And I stayed with Misty, waiting for them to come back. And as we were waiting, Misty got more than a little bit amorous and was snuggling up to me and wanted to cuddle. And I was quite uncomfortable with that. And that proceeded for a period of time in the dream. And when the guys came back, I was sitting in a chair and Misty was sitting on my lap, cuddling. Again, I was quite uncomfortable with the whole idea. And that was the end of the dream. Karen and I worked on that this morning to see what that might be saying to me. And I'll give a whirl at it, and people please get in there if you like. But the fact that it was New Year's, that's a new beginning.
That's where I would go.
What's that?
That's where I would go.
Yep, a new beginning. And the fact that I was collecting together Eric and Terry to go over to Misty's house, that would say to me that I'm looking at, for a forever living point of view, the new beginning is with Misty. And that part of my plans was to involve some drinking of alcoholic beverages, and that would indicate to me that there was, I'm figuring that forever living, even Misty, has some spiritual content.
Oh.
Spirit is great spirit. And then with Misty becoming amorous and cuddling, I saw that as me talking about, my dream talking to me about intimacy. And the way I linked all that together is that as I'm into forever living in this new beginning with Misty, I'm seeing that part of what goes with this new beginning is a great deal of intimacy, and I'm not comfortable with that. And that I can relate to that, that when I'm working with members of our group, I'm finding I'm getting more and more intimate with them. And it's, I guess the fact of the matter is that I'm still not comfortable with that level of intimacy. So that's where Karen and I took it when we talked about it this morning.
Well, you took it pretty much the way I would have taken it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That for the most part, I represent forever living, and how intimate do you want to get with it? And how comfortable are you with that?
Because I think what I'm finding is that with Roger's passing, to me the emphasis on theory is giving away to application, and application for me necessarily moves into intimacy.
Right. You can keep your distance with theory, but when you really put it into action, you have to get in there intimately and do it.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, that brought something for me. I didn't
go directly to intimacy with, I was thinking more like as you get, you know, more personally, intimately involved in actually living, everything Forever Living is, provides, talks about. My take on it was you're not feeling too comfortable with that. You know.
Putting it into your life, you mean?
Yeah, no, not just talking about it anymore, actually doing it. Not just arguing about, you know, these things or working them out in our minds, but actually getting involved.
But that is more my emphasis. That's,
yes.
That's where I see Forever Living going. Okay, so we know all this theory now. Now, what do we do with it? How do we live this? And how do we live it at every moment of our lives?
I mean, you know, to me, it's like Roger would ask, you know, when are you going to stop holding this at arm's length or something?
Right.
He's always told us that forever living is not something you live. It's, I mean, it's not something you do while you live your life. It's totally how you live.
Mm-hmm.
It's who you are. Well, I mean, to hell with it, man. It's who you are.
Yeah. Are you going to fully embrace it or not?
Yeah.
Because
Pat, my impression is that you're still living this as something you do. It's like to me, and this doesn't. It's just Andrew, right? And Andrew's usually off on these kind of things. But it's like, you know, it seems like you're still trying to pack it down into a statement that encompasses everything, so then you can do it. And that's not intimate. That's not fully being and I don't know what you want to call it. Not letting it in. I don't know what. I see the image. I don't know how to find the word. Becoming intimate with it, for lack of a better word.
Well, remember
maybe
years ago, Patrick, you asked the question of Roger, you know, about feelings and things, you know, because you felt that Forever Living was so non-feeling and things like that. I do remember something about that. And
yep, that's right.
And the answer was that it is very feeling once you fully embrace it and live it. But if you hold it as a theory and at a distance, sure, you can analyze it forever and it can be non-feeling. But if you fully embrace this and get into it, it is the most intimate and most feeling thing that there is. And your worries were that it was just going to be kind of monotone, kind of, if I remember right.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
And his answer was, uh-uh. Very much not that. Very much feeling. Very much intimacy and embracing. And if you look at what was taught all along, you know, trying to get you, all of us, to be more intimate. Intimate communication, relationships, so on and so forth. It's all about that intimacy. What else do we come to life to do but to interact and be intimate with life and those that we live with?
Which somewhat to me goes back to the thing he was talking about earlier about came to life with access and knowledge of how the universe works, but seeing everybody else doing something else gave it up to get along. You know, not really being able to say, hey guys.
But if you fully embrace the way the universe works, there would be no separation.
Damn it, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, I can tell you, one of the things I experienced when I say I've done some thinking again, and in this particular case, I was quite literally chatting with Roger as I was walking down the trail. And it was a very, fulsome and enjoyable experience, and the putting that to writing in these emails was, I really felt alive and functioning, really neat. And then what tends to follow when I have had that kind of experience is that I'm really mellow with life. My tendency to judge just seems to fade into the background. It seems it's easy. I find it way more easy to simply, quite literally, live off the tip of my nose, self-evidently. It's quite a different experience than the fellow who really wants to manage and be in control of everything all the time. It seems that the gateway I've provided for myself is to consider these things about forever living, the details, the nuances oftentimes. Consider them deeply as a way to get over barriers that I created for myself. I seem to step through those barriers. And I think, if I understand this correctly, I'm having a very intimate conversation with you guys right now.
So why won't you have an intimate conversation with the Canada Group?
Good question. And I think what it is that I see myself as the leader of the group.
Yeah.
And that as the leader, I find it desirable to maintain an image.
So is it possible that that is like the alcohol, like false spirits? It's just false, it's false spiritualities of this stuff.
Because that's who you sent out to get the spirits.
Right. Now I would, you know, you guys, I just, to me the dream was interesting because I'm going to go to celebrate this new beginning at Misty's, and that's the, you know, that's the mothership, man. That's the home core of all this stuff right now. And you guys get there and you start thinking about, hey, let's go goof off. That's my interpretation. Let's go get some false spirit, do some drinking, cruise around. It may not be the wisest thing to do, but we're thinking about it anyway. And I'm just thinking, like, maybe the group, the way you're running it, if you don't want to rock the boat, is holding you back.
You said a whole bunch of tangled things there.
Okay. I'll break it down.
Let's untangle it.
You went,
Chief.
You went, okay, so real simple. To me, the dream was, you're going to celebrate this new beginning by going to Kona. The heart and soul of the Forever Living stuff, okay? And you bring these guys from, you know, your group with you, and you guys start talking about drinking, false spirits, goofing around, partying, playing.
But wherever is it false spirit?
That's what alcohol is considered in dreams.
It's an intoxicant. It's not genuinely feeling good. It's an induced feeling good that leaves once this, you know, once the thing wears off.
Okay.
Maybe like, I'm just going to say it, you know, maybe the group you guys are running.
That's consequenting. Let's back up a little bit. Because I think it's really important to me. That's consequenting. If I can remember, I'm fighting the authority if my memory serves me at all, that Roger, a long time ago, said that anybody who is doing alcohol is seeking spiritual
sure.
Whether or not it is.
Yeah, right, stoic, yeah.
Yeah, but it always has been that they are seeking spiritual, but as a result of seeking spiritual, they are using false spirits in place of the real McCoy.
Real?
Mm-hmm.
False or real what?
McCoy, that
McCoy
just, the
just
real thing.
The real thing.
Because they don't know how to obtain the real thing. And so, as an alternative to that, they will accept false spirits because they so desire that in their life. And that's one of the things that we used to do when we worked with the alcoholics a lot, was realize that they were definitely seeking some kind of spiritual thing. They just didn't know how to obtain it.
Well, that's an interesting thing you bring up there, Misty, because just thinking about, I guess, the way the dream went out was, you say they don't know how to get it. I see that. I do see that. I was also looking at the possibility of want the real thing, but are afraid to actually get it, so they substitute with something, you know, lesser.
Yeah, that's possible. But in any event, it's not the real thing.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's why Andrew is saying what he is saying, Patrick. And it's not
okay.
It's not a criticism of you. It's just saying what you're telling yourself in this dream.
And you're welcome to tell me, you know, where it's consequencing. I really am. I definitely want to, you know, get better at doing dreams. It's just I was trying to trace the course of action.
For me, it was more of a matter of this, therefore that, and this, therefore that, and therefore that. And I shut down. I didn't want to listen anymore because there's a whole bunch of changes I thought were judgments and consequences.
Well, okay. From your, okay, so I guess I started making extrapolatory questions. So I just said you guys went there and diverted into false spirits.
Who is doing what? I'm having a hard time hearing.
Dishes.
Dishes or something.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize I was off mute. I'm listening and...
Okay.
He's home from the walk with her dog.
So, Patrick, my second, maybe third statement was just asking question if the relationship with the guys from your group is contemplating false spirits, then I started asking in what way the group in Canada might be holding you back. You have to maintain the role of the leader. That's not intimate. That's not really where you're at. Perhaps. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I do hold the notion that if I can't back up what I'm saying to the group in a logical, more than logic, if I'm putting a concept to the group from Forever Living, I task myself to be able to explain it in the greatest detail that I can. And when I say that I'm the leader of the group, I'm going to go back a little bit here. We've taken more than a couple of runs at involving people who want to make it a discussion of every little New Age thing they ever heard and don't want to talk about anything like Forever Living. And so I find it necessary and desirable to say this is what we're talking about, Forever Living, not about every other New Age thing they ever read about. and I keep it very focused and around those things, because people, it's amazing what people say, oh, that sounds just like what, you know, the Buddhists say. It just sounds just like what I read once. And I tasked myself to say, well, it may sound similar, but, and I try to make it uniquely for every living. And so I think it's necessary and desirable that I take a sometimes a firm leadership role to keep us on the subject.
That's I got that. I've run groups, man. I totally am with you on that one. That is definitely a stance you have to take once in a while. I think my question is more a matter of, as long as you have to maintain the appearance of being a leader, of knowing everything, they'll never, you keep people from knowing that you don't really know in application.
Yeah, I get that. But
I don't know, as long as I've known you, Pat, you wanted to, and hey, believe me, your close cousin here is saying this, so don't take it too personal. You know, you wanted to be in charge of this stuff. And in a certain way, I think the dream, like, with, you know, well, Misty's taken a, you know, in the dream, Misty, forever living, and the things this represents, takes it in a way that, in application, you know, you're not in control of this. Maybe that's a short-term, you know, transition you go through before you get on this new beginning, but it just seems, as long as you maintain the leader role, I don't know.
Well, can you not be the facilitator and still be intimate?
Yeah, I can do that.
I mean, because that's what I feel I do with you guys. I'll help guide you as best I can if you go off subject or something, and help hold the thing together, but I'll also bare my soul to you guys at the same time. I've often told you that we're on this journey together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that you would feel that you were on the journey together with those in Canada. If you set yourself up as a guru, then you have to maintain a certain stance, and you can never be fully intimate, and therefore never fully do forever living.
Yeah. That was in my head right now. You can, as a leader, you cannot be intimate. I mean, as a leader, you described it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, Simone, you say that, because you get me thinking, like, so was Roger not intimate in directing the little culture that we have created here?
And what do you think?
No. Why do you think that?
To me, there was a combination of things. Sometimes I think he wasn't, but by and large, I always took it that he just happened to have more knowledge than the rest of us, and he was, as he always said, his job was to develop the information, which is what he was doing. But at the same time, somehow I didn't feel like he was using us to get his, to fulfill a fantasy of being a guru or anything.
He never wanted to be a guru.
No.
He never wanted to.
I also found him desperately, seeking our comments to bring him to discuss on his level, not being the teacher. Is it understandable what I say?
Yeah, well, he even wrote a book on that, of teacher-student. That we're every one of us is the teacher and student, and vice versa.
He often said, "I don't have the answer."
Yeah. But he was intimate because of the way
he was further than we all were, and I think further than I don't know. I don't say that. But he always asked us to participate in the discussion because he didn't have the all the answers. That's how I understood it often.
I think that Simone was interesting because I think he was better at pointing out when we were off than knowing how to express necessarily when he was on. I think he was maybe trying to figure that out, but again, didn't feel like that was him holding it over us as much as it was, come on, guys, get involved.
Yeah.
With me.
Oh, uh-huh. That's the way you mean it.
So, Pat,
but
are you
early on?
Okay.
There was a time early on when he did say that he himself and Misty were off limits, that we could question each other and challenge each other about what it meant, how we were living our lives and all that kind of stuff, but he made it pretty clear that Misty and himself were off limits.
Yeah.
And
but even in that, I felt like he was more trying to get something, share something, get it across, than he was trying to set himself up on a pedestal.
Oh, I never ever thought he was on a pedestal, ever, ever. He used to enjoy being challenged from time to time just because he enjoyed the challenge. But but I don't remember him ever setting himself up on a pedestal.
So if you look intimately to your own way you've set up the Canada group, I don't know if it's you and Karen have set it up or if you have set it up. You know, how are you running or how is the Canada group run? Is it intimate? That's just a rhetorical.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question.
And sorry, I'm just gonna shut up. Is it application or is it theory? Application, I guess, would be intimate.
Well, my biggest thing is translating the theory into application. There's all kinds of neat theory. So when the rubber meets the road, the theory doesn't mean a hell of a lot. Unless we help each other with application.
Well, but isn't that where Roger drew the line? Because he said he would never tell us how to do it.
I know, and but that's the thing is that it. You know, I can recall just on our Monday calls here that we were still very careful that we're not giving each other advice. That we're not trying to tell us each other how they're supposed to be living. But there is a transition from cause and effect and judgment, and that the application requires some assistance, like some workbook stuff maybe, or exercises we can do together to help burn in new synapses in our brain. So that we're not always going on the old synapses and
but that's
reacting.
A doing.
What's that?
That's a doing.
Well,
we already have it.
Yep.
We already have it. We don't have to do anything. It's just recognizing that we get in our own way of being.
While you're doing. Now you tell me how you do so that you are no longer being reactive and judgmental.
No, I already am reactive and judgmental, and that's what makes me stop and go, okay, what am I doing here? This is the human part that I don't have to be muddled down in. This is the part that makes me uncomfortable that I can recognize so that I don't have to do that. I don't have to be that. That's not, that's a human part that I don't have to stay stuck in. It's a diversion.
What do you consider as the human part?
The judgment. The reactions, the way that we get muddled down into the stuff that makes us uncomfortable.
What other part do exist then?
The eternal
loner
being.
Self, I think. Yeah, DNA, loner stuff that we've inherited.
Yeah. Okay, now I get it. Yeah.
So, you know, just to get to me, there's, it's interesting to talk about applying this stuff or application. Even that is a step removed. It's like I'm going to do this thing and like it's causal. To me, application matters. Get in and be it. You know, declare yourself and go from there. And then I think, you know, describing or explaining some of the theory becomes quite manageable because you're referring to your own experience. Which, by the way, comes from experience.
I got to tell you that I don't think there's many more than those of us that are on this call that have put as much effort into forever living as we have. 20-some-odd years.
Agreed.
And I'm still a judgmental son of a bitch. Then there's something missing, something critically missing in integrating all these concepts into our lives. If I'm the outlier here that somehow or other everybody else has got it and I don't, then that's probably a good idea. I understand that. But I'll tell you, 20-some-odd years later, and it's almost like in some many respects, it's almost like I just began. And there's got to be something else we do. Don't mean it in a cause and effect way, but there is something that we're missing in integrating this into our lives.
Not integrating.
No, I don't think we're missing it at all. I think that we are that, and I think we get distracted with the human side of not being that. Not being what we are.
One of the things that we talk about in our group is when you say, you know, begin again. You
yes.
come to ask, begin what again? And in the, I've said many times here, in the absence of a really clearly declared and heartfelt declaration of an emprise, we're really not. I think that's so fundamentally the key. You know, Roger talked about the encode key. That the only encode key we got is our declaration of who we are and the origin story that you create for us.
Can I say no to that?
Sure you can.
Okay, so I agree with you. Those are two things we have, two tools we have. But to me, the encoding is when you're living it. And I don't mean, like, I'm going to remember my emprise today, because believe me, I spent a lot of years doing that, and I still do sometimes. I'm talking about, begin again is, I really am an eternal being who has chosen to be alive as da-da-da-da. And you know that, and you live in that way. Roger really, really, really got me into a corner once. I just could not understand what he was saying. It was so obvious what he was saying. He was saying that I wasn't attracting into my life at the time certain things and people because I wasn't living forever living. And it took me like damn near a week of asking, thinking about, what does that mean? I'm not living for, I mean, this is all I fucking do. Except that, who was I? I was still Andrew trying to become and integrate and, you know, get into doing these things. I was not eternal being Anno, who came alive as living, doing, and this is what I'm doing. I didn't have my sense of a past, you know, a Superman story, and I didn't have a strong sense of my declaration. Because I wasn't doing it. So I would offer, Pat, if you want a new beginning, are you willing to really start being Gabriel?
I've come to realize that no matter what is going on, that's what I'm doing all the time anyway. And I don't, often don't even recognize it. Hey, that's what, it's the that basic way that I am alive.
Okay, well, if I may, the statement you emailed us, I came alive to offer order to those who believe their lives are without order and meaning.
That's right.
Okay. To me, I started writing an email at work, but I couldn't finish it. I was just going to say, did you want to reconsider that? Is it possible that that's going to get you in, it's already into causal outcomes and then built in with that as judgment to prevent you from being this?
Can you talk about that some more?
With that? Can I talk about that some more?
Yeah.
So last week, number 90, what was it? 7? Starts off, and incipit is an action. So the action part of this isn't so much the question as it is, you came alive too. The object of your coming alive is to fulfill a purpose of offering order. And then it matters what you're doing. If it has a consequence or an outcome, then that just judgments. I mean, remember that Monday night where we talked about consequences beget judgments. They go hand in hand.
Well then, okay.
Hey, Misty, you can interject here anytime.
I'm just wanting to listen to where you guys are taking this. You know, you're not going off, you know, on tangents, so I'm fine. Just keep discussing. If I have something important to say, I certainly will intervene.
I think I see what you mean, that there is a cause and effect relationship in that.
Well, and even if we just took the language, there is an unknown you doing something. And Roger was big on not having that kind of,
and
what you call it.
From your point of view, does that mean that I must name myself?
Well, I have a slight advantage in having listened to the 2008 Monday night discussions, or several of them, where we were talking about this. How do you live? How do I, you know, how are you be alive? That whole thing was really more in discussion at the early part of the year, and probably throughout. But I recall him saying something like, so an example that we used was Andrew, you know, I came alive as, you know, an eternal. Roger had chosen to be alive as an eternal being. That's who he is, bar none. And in that, and this was really important to you, as knowing this particular discussion, it doesn't matter what you do. Knowing who you are, anything you do, that's who you are. It's like the outcome didn't matter because you already were.
from the beginning the thing you wanted to be. There was no outcome that mattered.
Then where does an emprise fit in?
An emprise then to me is, I looked it up last week, right, because I couldn't remember that. It's like, it's a grand adventure. It's an exciting adventure or something. Similar to an enterprise, but it's more a chivalrous adventure. That's what it was. Okay, fine. You are come alive as this thing. Roger was discovering how, is who he is, discovering how the universe works and teaching that. Actually, to tell you the truth, that's more of a, I remember him saying that was really more of a promise than who he was. I don't know if he ever really gave us his personal declaration, but for lack of a better thing, discovering how the universe works and teaching that. That was his action self.
So, he came alive as an eternal being, and
that's who he was. That's his declaration. Came alive as an eternal being. And I guess his promise was discovering how the universe works and teaching that. No?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
I only remembered the second one.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, this was a, you know, it's interesting because I just happened to catch that too. As a, I never talked about that much.
So how would you do the statement? How would your statement go today?
Yeah, my statement today, you know, it's interesting, Pat. It's really interesting because I liked what you said in the early part of the email here, kind of mushy and flexible about what is on a particular occasion. I have come to find that the more different views, tools, better views of this that I've taken, the expression, though maybe different from tool to tool or from point of reference to point of, well, I don't know what you call it, from angle to, I can't remember, for each
points
time
on the circle.
Yeah, but also whether we're doing the image of God, whether I'm doing the past life reading, whether I'm doing the six things I'm proud of, whether it's like there's a constancy in these things that keeps coming up, and I just keep going, oh, it's no different. So today mine would be, so here's one. I never failed, going back to the old reading of showing people, showing and I can't remember even how I said it back then, but it had something to do with showing people to their fineness. That's an action that I am doing. There's no outcome to that, because it doesn't matter how I do it, I just do it. But I think maybe that I would say it today, or the next jump I took was the second becoming of fineness. Because that kind of put it into more of an action for me, that what it made me realize that everybody's really actioning. But nowadays, I think I say it more as, what do I want to say? I haven't even said this in words yet. Showing people to their personal enlightenment. So those are different words, but to me, the concept, underlying pattern, hasn't changed. Whether I'm showing them to their fineness, showing them to their enlightenment, or the second, I'm alive, this is what, the second becoming of fineness. Each thing is the same, to me anyway, it's the same process. See, I don't seem to lose it as much as I used to.
And I'm the same way. The essence of it is always the same, but to have exact words that I pin it down to, no. I guess I'm more mushy. I express it in different ways, but it's still the same thing.
Yeah, so to me then, you're pretty fixed, or pretty, not the word is, there's a word here. For lack of a better word, certain, solid, aware of yourself, you've declared who you are, or maybe just accepted who you are, I don't know which, but yeah, it doesn't, the words don't throw you. And so when we were doing some of these beginning stories a couple weeks ago, I thought like, man, if they don't have that piece of paper in front of them, how are they going to remember this? And that was just my guess. I was just thinking, because it just seemed like it was so worked out. I didn't really see it like coming naturally from.
Yeah, I don't want to have to memorize something. I want it to flow freely and express it in whatever way I feel like expressing it at that time, but the essence is always the same.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, Pat, whatever happened to, I don't remember what it was, offering in goodness, all things in goodness? Oh, judging in goodness.
I'll tell you, whatever happened to it is I never really understood it.
Okay.
And only relatively recently did I come to these kissing cousins to the understanding of it. No, I couldn't tell you for sure what judging and goodness mean in any kind of, what does that look like in life?
Okay, here's a question for you. In essence, in the underlying pattern, is it different than one of the other ones I heard? I can't find it in my notes anywhere. I swear to God, we discussed this, that you're always sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Is it any, you asking, is it any different?
In essence, if you can kind of drop down out of the words and look at the pattern, judging all things in goodness, or showing, living and showing that you are always sovereign, or that, you know, others, showing others that they are always sovereign.
That's, I don't understand your last word, Andrew.
Sovereign, like king, ruling, sovereign.
Oh.
You got it?
Not yet.
In charge of?
No.
All right, hang on.
V.
S-O-V-E-R-E-I-G-N.
R-E-I-G-N. Ah, okay, yeah.
What is it in Deutsch?
Souverän.
Oh, okay. Pretty cool.
Quite the same.
Okay.
No. Actually, Andrew, that reminds me that the past life that's been most influential in my current life is samurai. And that was all about being sovereign.
Right. And it's funny, right? One of the things I remember, I realized this morning was, you know, Roger always said those readings, those early readings were set up as the situation or struggle that was most active in your life today. I was like, oh, God, why do I got to go through all these struggles? But then I realized, since your greatest struggles reveal your finest assets, or if you tell me what, you know, what you're struggling with, and I know a lot about what you want, then I realized the readings really were revealing our finest assets.
And I guess if I take a look at what you've just reminded me of, Andrew, then I can take a look at this. I'm offering people to find order, helping them find order in their lives. The only way that can be done is if they see that they're sovereign in their lives.
You know, it's so I could hear Roger saying, you know, this statement probably does mean something to you, but, you know, how you manage to work it out in words or expressing, maybe that'll get you into a bit of a jam. So to me, it was like, as I read this, I see what you're saying, but somehow just me, that's all. I just, order could so easily be mutated into judging order, disorder. But if I personally see myself as sovereign in all things, I'm never not there.
That's right.
I'm never not 100% involved. And so for me, that's no different than judging everything in goodness, because no matter what I do, there I am. No matter what I do, it's good. No matter what I do, it's self. no matter what I do, is sovereign.
I'm really appreciating this, Andrew. Thank you.
It has to do with getting down into the essence of things.
Yeah.
And making connections. Getting out of the words to what's the pattern that the words are expressing. You do this in readings all the time. You know, a reading starts over here. A reading starts over here with one concept of whatever, struggle or fineness, whatever, and it's, no matter which life it goes to, it's the same pattern, twisted this way, upside down, to the left, to the right. It's the same pattern. Looking at from multiple angles, multiple facets.
I remember at one point Roger asking, can't remember, it was just me or was on the call, would it be all right to understand that you are nothing more than a pattern?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Kind of again, is that the truth?
It is.
Wow, I'm really enjoying this, guys. It's really illustrated.
Begin again.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. He said the same thing to us when he talked about multitudes. Everything in your life is a multitude of one thing. What's your one thing?
Well, I'm feeling kind of complete right now.
Okay.
Was there anything more that you wanted to discuss on that? Did you have another issue to bring up or anything?
No, I'm done.
Okay. Does anybody else have
something? Karen, what?
Something?
Yeah, I wonder. Karen's been awfully quiet over there. What do you think?
I think it's I think in some ways I'm too close to Pat to see those kinds of things that you're teasing out of it. I think it's awesome.
I understand that too.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really good.
Okay. Does anybody else have something they want to discuss?
No.
I guess not. Okay, so we have two options here. We can either call it for the night and just let us sit with what we've just gone over and imaginate on that stuff for ourselves, or pick up the reading from where we had it last week.
I vote for imaginating.
Okay, let's do it that way. So what we'll do is we'll pick up again next week where we were going to start reading this week, and the rest of us just imaginate on what we've talked about and see how this applies to our own lives, because it's not an accident that we've had these discussions. It's not an accident that these issues have been brought up with all of us here, and it all applies to all of us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So,
yeah, that's what I found too when this word came up before, sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
It comes close to authority.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's my declaration.
Okay.
Wait, you had a declaration this week?
Sure.
Well, I'd like to know it.
Oh. Showing other people that they can live by their own authority. And myself, too. So, somehow, everything is entangled, I want to say. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So there we have it.
I want to express my gratitude to all of you. I really feel supported and engaged with all of you, so thank you so much.
You're most welcome. So with that, guys,
a great group.
I'm going to say goodnight for now.